Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the November 13, 2016 session, focusing on Psalm 98, Let Every Voice. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Daniel Glaze.
And I'm Bert Montgomery.
We've got the full crew back together for this podcast. It's good to see everyone tonight.
Good to see you.
Yeah,
and welcome back, Daniel. We're glad you're back with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, Bert, this particular psalm, something tells me that you may have some words for us around this one. You want to get us started?
Well, I'll give it a try. I want to start with a quote. God has given us music so that, above all, it can lead us upwards. The quote continues, music unites all qualities. It can exalt us. It can divert us. It can cheer us up. It can break the hardest of hearts with the softest of its melancholy tones. But its principal task is to lead our thoughts to higher things, to elevate, even to make us tremble. Song elevates our being and leads us to the good and the true. Now, believe it or not, that majestic ode to the power of music, that celebration of music as God's gift to us, came from a young German boy named Friedrich Nietzsche. Nietzsche was reportedly about 13 or 14 when he was reflecting, assessing, and observing and writing that stuff. What were you guys doing at 13 or 14? I was playing air guitar with my Kiss records. But I get what Nietzsche's saying. Rock, jazz, classical, folk, funk, blues, Broadway musicals. I have music always at the ready to match any mood I'm in, whether it's hopeful, sad, angry, content, happy, bored, defiant, thankful, or mellow. And I have music that I go to help me change my moods, to help me cope, to help motivate me, to help me relax. Music speaks to us somewhere deep in our souls where words fail. Music expresses for us something deep down within us when words cannot. Scholars remind us that the Psalms are the songbook of Israel, and the Psalms are filled with music. And of course, there are a variety of themes and patterns and rhythms and purposes found among the Psalms. Psalm 98 is often categorized as one of the enthronement Psalms because God is seen as sitting on his throne, watching over all of us, watching over all the world, over all things. And all of creation responds by making music to God, and all of creation invites us, you and me, to join in. It reminds me of that great song from The Who. When you hear the sound a-coming, you hear the drummer drumming, won't you join together with the band? Make a joyful noise, all the earth, the psalmist says. The roar of the seas is part of the orchestra. The trees clap along in time. The hills are bursting in song. Sing a new song. Pick up your instruments. Tune them up. Warm up your voices. Get up and dance. Stomp and wave your hands. God is on the throne. God keeps her promises. God reveals his righteousness to all the nations. Shout to the Lord, the psalmist says. Shout, shout, shout it out loud, Kiss says. Let loose and sing. Strike up the band. Eugene Peterson says in The Message, and I like Peterson's version because in verse 6 he puts it like this, feature the trumpets and the big trombones. I love that because I play trombone. And when I hear this psalm, I hear a call to join the band. The world got you down? God's still on God's throne. Join the band. Are you afraid of what's going to happen on November 9th, especially if your candidate doesn't win? Hey, rulers come and rulers go, but God is sitting on the throne and watches over the world forever. Come together and join in the band. And in the fine tradition of the Psalms, I'll just end by saying, Selah.
Mm. Well, I think we might just be done now, Bert.
You say somebody,
fork in it.
Somebody just pronounced the benediction. And we go now, home.
I think we're done. Short podcast tonight, y'all.
That really made me want to rock and roll all night.
Yeah, you're right.
Party every day.
And part of every day, right?
That's right.
Well, party every day. When are you going to sleep?
True.
Y'all are too young to remember Dharma and Greg. That's an old Dharma and Greg joke.
I love Dharma and Greg.
He thought the lyrics were rock and roll all night.
I watched Dharma and Greg.
He thought the lyrics were rock and roll all night and part of every day. And she corrected him and he says, well, when do you sleep?
Well, I love that that Bible background, Bert. Whether you intended this or not, but your background was musical in nature. You had the refrain that kept hitting us. And it just goes to show the incredible power of music to elevate our consciousness. But I think the danger is we can make music utilitarian. Its purpose is to, to mediate our relationship with God, and it doesn't mm-hmm. Exist on its own as a thing of beauty and a creative act itself. You know what I'm getting at? That I think there's a danger there.
It can be
there.
Manipulative.
Yeah, that's true. That as beautiful as it is, we can make it too utilitarian, and that it only serves a purpose, rather than being something beautiful and created that God delights in on its own. And that is delightful to us as well.
Yeah, and both Nietzsche and in the Psalms, and the scholars that talk about the Psalms, I may have narrowed down the meaning of this psalm a little bit, because in the Psalms in general and music in general, it doesn't necessarily have to be focused on bringing us to God, A, in order to do so, but and B, in order to be honest and true. And that's what the scholars talk about. Just as, when you're angry when I'm angry and mad, I'll put on Guns N' Roses. And there's not a lot of uplifting stuff in Guns N' Roses that, you want to sing on in church on Sunday morning. But that's part of the human emotion. And that's mm-hmm. that is also part of the Psalms. Guns N' Roses type lyrics in the Hebrew Psalms, mm-hmm. Bash those babies' heads upon the rock, I'm angry, I'm ticked off. Indeed. God, where are you? What's going on?
Mm-hmm. It makes me think about, I grew up listening to music all the time. My mom was an elementary school music teacher. My dad loved music. He was always having it, he was always playing it around the house. And we listened to everything. I mean, we would listen to anything from classical or big, huge church choirs to Motown, rock and roll, Eagles, country, everything. We just, across the board, we would listen to just about anything. And so I loved music, and I was always a part of church choir. And so I probably spent, and I appreciated your stuff because I was in the band too. I play the French horn. Yeah. So love a band geek. And so music was a huge part of my life. And then I went to college and I was a part of a singing group. And then I went to seminary and I was so busy. I kind of stopped singing in choir and I stopped doing music as much because my life was just busy doing a lot of things. And I did not know that I was missing it. And so I probably went a good 6 years not involved in music in much of any way. And so then I had the great privilege of helping to organize a youth choir weekend retreat. And I sang with them. And about halfway through the rehearsals that weekend, I was weeping. And I was thinking, what is wrong with me? And I finally was able to put together that I had not sung with a choir aside from like Sunday morning worship in a really long time. And singing is such a bodily experience. It's so physical that I was reacting to that. And I finally was able to put together that it was stirring within me something that hadn't been stirred in a really long time. And it was very healing and meaningful. And I felt like I was reconnecting to God in a very new and old way, if that makes sense.
That absolutely makes sense. I think music has this way to connect to, not only to connect our hearts to God, but to connect to a very deep, intimate part of ourselves. It's a very, very emotive. I mean, how many times, I can't tell how many times I've been, you know, at the front of the church as a minister leading worship, and we're singing a hymn, and you'll see folks just overcome with with emotion, and the tears just flow. And usually, I know what's going on. Sometimes I'll, you know, very quietly mention, do we need to talk this week or something like that? And almost every time, it's we sung that at my mama's funeral.
Yeah,
and the first line took me. I was there at the front with the casket in front of me.
Yeah.
If I had started to repeat my funeral homily, it wouldn't have had nearly the same effect.
Right.
Or if I had prayed the exact same prayer I prayed at the graveside.
Yeah.
Not at all the effect. Not even the scripture read. But we sing, you know, Amazing Grace, or Great is Thy Faithfulness, and it just takes us back. And what can do that but music?
Mm-hmm. So this makes me think about something. I worked with a wonderful music minister. His name's Glenn Gregg. And he was in a church that he was constantly encouraging the congregation to participate in the singing and worship. He did a lot of education around worship and what the purpose of worship is. And he insisted, he would really challenge people, raise your voice, join within the community to sing. And I don't intend this at all to be a question about what worship is better. But it makes me wonder, what if you're someone who's not comfortable with congregational singing? How important is this method of worship? There are a lot of different kinds of worship where that don't encourage the congregation to sing, but rather to watch. Mm-hmm. And that can happen in really any style of worship, just depending on who's leading. That's not about this kind of worship or that kind of worship. It has a lot more to do with, I guess, who's up front. So I guess, if I am wondering, how important do you think this is to a life of faith? Is this vitally important?
I think yes. And I'm not going to articulate this well because the thoughts are forming sort of right now. But who was it that said, tell me what you sing and I'll tell you what you believe? Have you all heard that before? If I can find who said that, I'll put it in the show notes for this episode. But I think it's a way for us to, you know, for congregational proclamation, if you will, to state and restate the stories of our faith. Because so often, you know, in our hymnody, which is sort of funny because in some Baptist churches from years ago and maybe still today, you'll sing stanza 1, 2, and 4. I had a friend in seminary who said, there's a lot of great stanza 3, you know, throughout this that I just don't know. And so, you know, it does tell a story, and you miss it when you skip.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's congregational proclamation, I think. I'm tripping over my words, but I think it's vitally important.
Music is one way that we express both emotion and those mysterious aspects of our faith that words don't fit around, right? I mean, we both in terms of when we think about God or talk about God, we have to know that our words are limited and incapable of capturing, you know, all that God is, or even most of what God is. And music maybe is one of our ways of somehow expressing or connecting with that other that words, you know, can't work with. And, you know, that's part of why we struggle with it tonight, because music goes beyond words.
Yeah, and I think that's why instrumentals are so powerful. because it's the syncopation, it's the beat, it's the rhythm, it's the rising and the, mm-hmm. the coming down, you know, and the speeding up and the slowing mm-hmm. down. So in instrumental music, classical music and stuff, it could take you mm-hmm. to heights and depths and anger and war and, you know, tranquility, all this kind of stuff. And then you add songs with lyrics to it. And the music, even if the mm-hmm. lyrics are stupid or the lyrics are offensive or the lyrics don't make any sense, if the music's good enough, you know, it carries Enjoy you it. In spite yeah. of the lyrics. Right. And sometimes the lyrics carry you in spite of the music, you know. It's just
– And I think – Yeah, and I think it's really important. You know, we talk about how our faith is an incarnate faith, in that Jesus became human to be among us, and so it's very much about what it means to be human. And I think that music and participating in music, whether we're playing an instrument or whether we are singing, it is a very And I've said it before, physical experience. We have to pay attention to our breathing. We can feel the vibrations in our vocal cords. You can feel the beat when the drums are being played. And I think that matters. I think that it helps us experience our faith and what we believe with more than just our heads. And so like when you talk, I think that's why, Daniel, when you said, you know, if I started to preach my sermon that I said at the funeral, like that's a very head experience. Yeah. We're taking it. Sometimes it's heart.
Right.
Sometimes the words speak deeply to us, but it's not physical most of the time, unless maybe something moves us to tears. But singing and music, it engages every cell in our body. And I think that matters. I think a lot of times we don't give enough attention to the way that our bodies experience what we're doing in worship and how important those things are.
You know, the structure of so many of the Psalms, and I'm not a Hebrew scholar. I did the best I could in seminary with it to get the degree. But the structure from what they tell us, y'all may know more, is very poetic of many of the Psalms. Sometimes they're set up alliteratively, you know, going down the Hebrew alphabet so that each phrase starts with something, mm-hmm. Or they've got rhyming couplets. So it's almost like song lyrics, and they're meant to be sung. Many of them are meant to be sung, and we lose that so much in trying to get a good English translation of what is meant. We've lost the music of the Psalms, and so that when they were hearing this, when the Hebrew people were hearing this, chanting it, singing it, having it said to them, there was the rhythm, there was the rising and the falling, and the clapping and the stillness that goes with music. I mean, the Psalms in and of themselves as constructed are musical.
Okay, whether this is appropriate here or not, if not, y'all forgive me. Pet peeve. And I apologize if this is a part of any of your traditions. But have you been in a worship service where someone will sing a solo and it's listed in the order of worship as special music?
Oh, yeah.
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 I know they don't mm-hmm. mean anything by it, but the implication then is that the rest of the music is not special. And I love a beautiful solo, but there's something incredibly lived out, you know, with congregational song. Part of me wants to call all the hymns special music and, you know, I told you that didn't have anything to do with anything, but
No, actually, I think it's important. I was visiting churches when we first came here, and my family went to visit a church, and at some point in the service, the two people came up, and they were singing a solo, but the point was they were teaching the song because they were going to be using it for the next four Sundays for the congregation. So they were going to sing it this Sunday, and then the whole congregation was going to like join in and then sing it the next four Sundays. And so this was the first time, probably, honestly, that my son had experienced a solo in church. And so they started singing, and he leans over to me and whispers in my ear, and he says, "It's too bad we don't all have a microphone."
Oh, amen.
And I thought, that. I thought, out of the mouth of babes.
Man.
And the church was doing nothing wrong. Like, they were being very responsible in worship, teaching, you know, it was a teaching moment. But it really, it stuck out to him. He knew he wasn't singing at this point. And he kind of wanted to be. And I thought that was, I thought that was really telling. Mm.
I want to know, Daniel, does your church, the one you're at now or the one you're going to, have special music?
We just have solo.
That's how you list it, solo?
Solo or anthem or, you know, something
like
that.
You're
a
high church.
Or introit or response or whatever.
I didn't mean that. I just meant, you know, I can't put anthem when I've got a local band from the bar coming to play the Rolling Stones. Anthem.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I like that. And I've struggled with that, incorporating when I do the order of worship, because our order of worship is very simple and very basic. But we do have places where there's a solo or a small group leading in a special a song for us to hear. And I put special music and the name of the person singing or playing or something. But I have thought the same thing you've thought. Well, what does that say about the rest of our music? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't want to. And now welcome to the stage, you know.
That's right. That's right.
Now I feel like we need to come up with alternative names for what we call those things.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Just start singing.
Yeah.
So, Bert, one of the things that I loved about what you said in your intro, you said, okay, so are you worried about November 9th, especially if your candidate doesn't win the ticket, join the band? And that really stuck out, because I do think that there's so many of us that, gosh, even if the person that we vote for wins, you know, some people aren't going to be happy no matter what. And it certainly is a time of concern and anxiety in our country right now. I mean, even Canada's feeling it, right? Like, they're trying to send us all this love from Canada. Everybody's kind of empathized. Other countries are empathizing with us even. And, you know, so there's all this anxiety. And I really love how you reminded us that even in moments like this that feel so full of, that leave us feeling full of fear and anxiety and concern, that ultimately God is the one in control. God is the one carrying us all. And that when we, to use your phrase, join the band, when we lift our voices or our instruments in praise to God, we are lifted. We're lifted out of that anxiety and that fear, and to have a mechanism, to have a gift from God that we can use to lift ourselves out of the muck and mire. Gosh, there's so much grace in that for me. Like, that stuck out for me. And I just love this image of, you know what? Everything might feel awful, but I can join the band.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's the theme of Psalm 98. You know, one of the enthronement psalms, that God's on the throne no matter what. And it's a you know, and it counterbalances some of the other psalms, like, where's God? Mm-hmm. My enemies won, everything's screwed up, I'm miserable, where's God? You know, how much longer will I be down here, God? All that kind of stuff. So you get this balance. But then, you know, for the Hebrew people who have experienced so many great highs and so many deep lows, at some point they have to remember that God's watching over everything. And, Amy, I almost worked this into my opening, but, you know, God's on the throne. And also when I was 13 and 14 playing air guitar to Kiss, I was also listening to Amy Grant, who was singing Sing Your Praise. Well, you got to listen to something on Sunday mornings. Sing your praise to the Lord. What's the word? I can never tell you how much good it's going to do you. Sing your praise to the Lord. Just sing, sing, sing. And it's got a huge, majestic piano opening with Michael W. Smith, you know. just it's incredible.
Oh, man.
So,
well, I just can't get there is a definite personal note to this. I mean, I as an individual, I as a created child of God, need to sing, but I can't escape this singing as a way to live out our communal faith, and not to get too illustrative or too kitschy with it. But you know, there are times when, as a choir together, you know, one of our brothers and sisters can't sing tonight for whatever reason. Well, the rest of us continue to sing, not out of disrespect, but as a way to lift her or him up. Some of us sing off key. Some of us are on the wrong page. I don't want to say it doesn't matter, because all of that does matter. All of that together, I think, is part of the joyful noise God wants to hear.
Yeah, it's fascinating that that we are created beings that are musical. I mean, even those of us who don't sing well or play instruments typically like music. I mean, it's rare to find a person that doesn't like music or find themselves tapping their foot along with it. And mercy. I mean, you look at the cultures around the world and the various music forms that have emerged from those cultures that, you know, would only have arisen there. But there's no escaping that, you know, God was intentional about creating us as musical beings. I guess have to wonder, you know, the degree to which God is a musical being. Does God sing? Does God enjoy music and enjoys us making it?
That's really interesting, David. You asked, does God love music? Does God love to sing? And it's an obscure passage from Zephaniah 3, but the Lord your God is with you. He will take delight in you. He will rejoice over you with singing. So we serve a God who loves to sing as well. I think that's a neat image.
That's a great image.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all for a great conversation tonight. This was fun. I think I may go pull out some albums, put them on the turntable.
Yeah, absolutely.
We need to.
All right. Thanks, y'all. Look forward to next time.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thanks, David.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.